Hello and welcome to this PhD Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Sikkim speaks to Dr. Leila Faree, the CEO of the JSE, on what the future holds for Africa's largest stock exchange.
Hello and welcome to the Think Big series, a collection of dialogues with leading speakers brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Sikkim, and in today's session, we're catching up with Leila Faree, CEO of the JSE, getting her take on where she thinks things are at in South Africa, politically speaking, and what that in turn spells for the country's economic outlook, SA Inc., and the JSE as a contender for investor capital in a global economy, an economy that has various emerging trends and technological innovations shifting the landscape considerably. So, how exactly is Africa's leading stock exchange planning to keep up? Leila, good to have you in conversation today, and I'm going to jump straight into it. South Africa's Government of National Unity seems to have received a tentative vote of confidence, sparking cautious optimism about the economic outlook for the country. What's the reading on your sentiment barometer right now?
Alicia, cautious optimism is right. The GNU has created an opportunity for accelerated reforms. It's much more business friendly, and it's really about getting the economy growing across key issues such as electricity, logistics, and even areas of delivery relating to, for example, visas for skilled professionals. The optimism means that government has now an opportunity to draw on the goodwill of business and investors, but we must keep in mind that the goodwill won't last if we don't see real results emerging from the GNU. The GNU is very much in a developmental stage, and it was only established in June of this year, so it's still quite early to determine what the impact has been on the economy, but having said that, there is very positive sentiment, which was generated by the appointment of certain ministers. We've seen visible steps being taken by a number of newly appointed ministers to address long-standing challenges that have impeded our growth, and growth is a key problem that international investors have raised. So expectations are that the GNU will provide economic and political stability, and this will be beneficial for SA Inc. And improved economic and political outlooks are also very beneficial and important for our capital markets. The top 40 and the All Share are both up post the elections and the formation of the GNU.
Absolutely. So beyond the sentiment then, Leila, I mean, are you noting real tangible green shoots? That's what they call it, right? That's indicating the move beyond, mere rhetoric to actual structural reform that could start to shift fundamentals.
Alicia, we certainly are seeing green shoots, but it's too early to see actual execution of real reform. We're seeing positive progress that have been made on a number of reforms, some of which were committed to earlier and prior to the election, such as, for example, the president signing into law the new Electricity Regulation Act. And this, obviously, as we all know, allows for the establishment of an independent grid operator. It does appear as if the GNU is sustaining efforts on these important kinds of reforms. And we've also seen quite a few positive moves by new ministers to resolve legacy issues. For example, Leon Schreiber targeting the backlog in visa applications. And he's making considerable progress in getting on top of that. We've also seen Parks Tau, the DTIC minister, taking very proactive steps to engage with business, looking to improve the competitiveness of South African goods in the global market. So these are good indicators, but they need to consolidate into changes at a policy level so that the whole GNU can get behind and deliver on these transformations.
And I ask the question that way, Leila, because sentiment and fundamentals work hand in hand, right, in driving market activity. So are local, but more so international investors buying into the value proposition the South African market's now putting on the table? I mean, from the conversations you have, how are our capital markets being perceived by investors?
Alicia, we have to acknowledge that our markets have long been undervalued, especially relative to other market indices, and especially when we consider indicators like a dividend yield and price earnings ratio. So our shares are cheap compared to both developing and developed markets, and that's reflected a low level of confidence in by the international investors. And they're really hesitant until we get on top of challenges like growth, the electricity crisis, etc. So that said, this discount creates a great opportunity when investors sense that things are changing. And the GNU has provided a trigger for re-rating and enabling investors to take a fundamentally different view on the relative value of South African assets. We have seen signs of this improvement in government bond yields and also strengthening of the rand. And this is really starting to show tangible results in our markets.
Yeah, so if we're talking South Africa's investment case then and this, you know, renewed repositioning in the global market, Leila, especially in relation to our emerging market peers, is it actually translating to capital flows? You know, this real demand for South African assets, especially given value in rand terms, versus a focus mm-hmm. then on international markets and opportunities?
Alicia, we need to look at the history to assess this. And in May of this year, during the month of elections, we saw 32 billion rand flowing out in our equity market, compared to 12 billion in the prior year, or almost 13, 12.9 billion. Since the election, we've seen a quite dramatic and steep decline in the outflows in the cash equity market. So we've seen in June, 5 billion versus 20 billion in the prior year. In July, 1.8 billion outflow versus 8.1 billion in the prior year. And in August, we saw 10 billion outflow relative to the prior year of 24 billion. So we are starting to see quite an encouraging shift. Investors were previously underweight the index globally, global emerging market investors, and they are now starting to indicate that they're shifting to a more balanced position. And if we do deliver, that there is a very real possibility that that could translate into an overweight position on South Africa, especially given how undervalued our stocks are to begin with.
Yeah, but a lot of it, right? Any sustainable performance and growth from here on out will be dependent on, you know, that structurally low growth scenario turning itself around before we see, for example, an equity market re-rating, even if deemed undervalued. And then also taking into consideration broader global market dynamics that are in play beyond the local factors. What are you keeping an eye on in that regard, Leila?
If we have a look at our performance relative to the emerging markets, Alicia, it's very encouraging. We've outperformed our all share, and Top 40 has outperformed the MSCI emerging market and world by about 9% since the introduction of the Government of National Unity. Our bond yields have also been very strong. At the moment, around 13% improvement in key benchmarks, for example, the R186. If we have a look at our indices, during the first half of the year leading up to the elections, our all share was up by 1.3%. Between June and the end of August, our all share index has been up by 9.2%. Mm. And so we are seeing a significant improvement in growth post the election and in valuations. These are not all linked explicitly in a linear way to the GNU, but because There has been a general increase in global markets, but it's definitely a very important factor. And we are performing well relative to our emerging market peers in our equity and our bond market.
Leila, I've got to ask, enough to shift listing activity on the JSE, because, you know, the number of delistings off the JSE, like it or not, has supported what's become a very loud narrative for the longest while now.
Alicia, as sentiment improves, you may well see the demand for investment increasing. And we've already seen green shoots year to date in the number of listings. And this translates, when we see a demand for investment, into a demand for companies to raise new capital. So the healthier the economy, the healthier the demand for capital, and therefore the need by companies to seek listings to raise capital. But there are also important structural reasons for the loss of listings that we've seen in capital markets across the world. There is also a greater demand for liquidity as pension savings has shifted to more of a defined benefit fund environment, which requires daily pricing. So these factors all remain part of the equation, and they are driven by structural features and policy environments. But better economic performance will certainly encourage capital raising on capital and public markets.
Leila, that being said, let's take a look at what is in your control, right? So talk us through some of the plans in play, amendments to the JSE's listing requirements via your market segmentation project has gotten quite a bit of attention. It effectively means less red tape and cost for some, right? And many anticipating what that could mean in terms of starting to shift things as well.
Absolutely, Alicia. So we've done a couple of things. Firstly, we've expanded our secondary listings framework quite materially over the past couple of months. A few months ago, we had 7 exchanges that were on our fast track or dual listing process. We've since added another 8, and that includes exchanges like Tadawul in Saudi Arabia, Euronext Amsterdam, Paris, Brussels, Dublin, Milan, Lisbon, and Oslo. So this opens up the opportunity for our local investors to access multinational dual listed companies. In terms of the changes that we've introduced more recently, as you mentioned, we announced at the beginning of August the two-tiered approach to our market segmentation of our main board, and we're basically dividing it into two, which is the main board prime segment and the main board general segment. Those companies that are outside of the all-share index, and there are about 115 of them, will be eligible for the general segment. Now, the general segment introduces more of a fit-for-purpose listings regime, and we've introduced quite material changes that reduce the amount of friction or the ability for those smaller companies to raise capital. And those things range from issuers of shares for cash, fairness opinions, historical information that's required has been reduced. The annual financial reporting has been streamlined. So there are a number of changes that we've introduced, and it's been very well received by the market.
Yeah, and it's key, Leila, because, you know, market vagaries aside, the impact of high compliance and administrative costs has been cited amongst the factors behind the significant decline in listings on the JSC. So, you know, this kind of, let's call it regulatory innovation, should be welcomed. As we wait to see if it provides incentive enough, though, let's tackle this viewer comment that's come through. The number of delistings we've seen over the years has triggered some angst around the risk it's presented for South African investors, in particular retirement funds, and in turn, lots of debate around Regulation 28 and the role the JSE can play in loosening those constraints, broadening the scope of the investment universe for local investors. What's your response to that slightly twofold comment?
So, I think ultimately in terms of Reg 28 and the fact that investors are required to retain 55% of their assets onshore, we have enabled an extensive dual listed environment. So more than 30% of our listed companies are dual listed, which gives local investors an opportunity to expose themselves to multinational growth trends. In addition to that, in terms of the second part of the question around broadening the scope of the investment universe, I have already spoken to the number of countries that we are now including in our fast track listings regime. In addition to that, we are also expanding the scope of investment opportunities. For example, we're seeing a surge in ETF and structured products. You would have seen that our actively managed certificates and actively managed ETFs have been launched, and these have enjoyed tremendous support. We are also seeing a continued growth in our debt space, particularly relating to sustainability and social and green bonds. So I think these things are tackled on multiple levels, and we are contemplating a holistic response in terms of the challenges that market participants are facing.
Yeah. Let's home in on that holistic response, Leila, and you've alluded to some of it, right? But how do you see emerging trends such as digitization, digital assets, but also data, and then ESG, sustainability criteria, impacting the JSE?
So we've been very responsive to all of these trends, and they are important trends that will shift and reshape our markets. In terms of the digital environment, the JSE led a proof of concept to create a tokenized market together with the SARB and the central bank and a number of the large banks. It was called Project COCA. We are now engaging market participants on what could look like phase two of that. So we're very alive to the digitization of assets and also the demand by our market participants for example, ETFs with a crypto or a digital underlying. We are engaging regulators and looking to enable a pathway to that segment of the market. In terms of what we're doing in the sustainability space, our green social sustainability bonds have more than doubled year on year for the last few years, sort of 3 to 5 years. And we see continued growth in that segment and continued interest. We've also launched a private placements market where debt and equity are raised for small and mid-cap environment and infrastructure participants. Mm-hmm. And many of those are also in the sustainability space. In terms of data, we see that as a growth initiative, and we've invested in our basic infrastructure, in the platforms that enable growth in these areas. And we're very pleased with the double-digit growth that we've seen in those areas. And really what we're doing from an exchange perspective is to try to diversify our revenue sources and protect ourselves against the cyclicality of the trading environment. We're still very much focused on the core. It's very important. But we do look to expand our other revenue sources and thereby slightly reduce our fixed cost base and also the volatility of the revenue line that we're facing.
As you go through all of this and evolve, and you mentioned, keeping up with the regulators, how exactly is the JSE adapting to the broader evolving regulatory environments that comes hand in hand with these trends and, ensuring compliance while maintaining market integrity?
Mm. Regulation, and especially for an emerging market, is critical to investor confidence. South Africa is renowned globally, and That is really key to the confidence of many of our international investors who are putting their capital to work on our markets. So we continue to stay ahead of the curve, and we are working with our regulators to remain relevant. Our restructuring of the market that I mentioned just a little bit earlier into prime and general segments is just one recent example. So we're responsive, we're very aware of the dynamics and the changes that we're seeing, and we're trying to demonstrate that in the enablement of new products and the platform on which our stakeholders trade.
Yeah, I asked the question, Leila, because, you know, how you enable something like sustainability in reporting frameworks, you know, is one of the challenges that all markets are grappling with right now. And again, a viewer question that that came through that's more direct. Will we see a release of an updated draft pertaining to the JSC sustainability recommended disclosure guidance soon? And will this be based on IFRS S1 and S2 and ensure compliance with this regulation?
So, Alicia, it's a very, very good question, and thank you for that. The sustainability disclosure guidance that the JSC released was released in June of 2022, and we are in the process of reviewing this disclosure. The original disclosure was based on a set of more than 10 global standards, ranging from IFRS to the ISSB standards, the European sustainability reporting, GRI, TCFD, all of the acronyms that you can imagine were part of, formed part of that disclosure framework. When we released our standards, our guidance in June of 2022, the IFRS S1 and S2 standards were in draft form. The IFRS standards are increasingly becoming a dominant international framework, and they also include quite a number of important changes to the draft versions. And so our review process is really taking account of the S1 and S2 changes that we saw, as well as where relevant, any recent developments. So, for example, the Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, or TNFD, and the GRI Biodiversity Standard are also being contemplated. And we also note that there are a number of changes that were passed in the company's amendment bill, for example, the pay gap metrics that are now required. So work is still underway, and we will align to ensure that any of the output that we create is considered in terms of what's happening in our broader regulatory sphere. And we are aware that the Companies Act, there is discussion around the mandating of such standards in the Companies Act. However, we will wait to see how that unfolds.
Absolutely. So while we wait, let's focus then on your top priorities right now, Leila. And let's cover perhaps looking forward to the next 5 years. You know, what are your top priorities for the JSC over the next 5 years?
So, Alicia, it's important for us to remain responsive to our existing constituents. We have deep liquid capital markets. We are starting to see green shoots, and we want to ensure that we remain relevant. We want to make sure that the basics, the hygiene factors, our systems resilience, all of the investment into cyber protection are there. We're also looking forward to transformational initiatives, such as our partnership with Amazon Web Services to upgrade and transform our BDA system, our back office system, which will reduce costs to market participants. In addition to that, we are transforming our data regime and how we monetize products that are available to the market. There is an ongoing scan of the market for inorganic growth opportunities. Which will augment and supplement our existing revenue streams. So we're looking at making sure that we protect and we grow our core, and that we are responsive and transform in new areas of development that we're seeing markets taking.
Yeah. Do what you may, you don't operate in a silo though, right? So what are you telling this new government should be its priorities moving forward that would act as a strong catalyst in unlocking South Africa's true economic potential?
Alicia, we have to just look at what our global investors are saying. They're saying they want policy certainty, they want growth, they want execution and delivery, particularly as it relates to electricity, unemployment, the logistics crisis that we've had. We have already started to see promising reform in the electricity and the power security environment. We are starting to see the indications of collaboration, public-private sector collaboration in the logistics sector. And all of these, we hope, will start to translate into growth. So I would say from a government perspective, we need a functioning GNU, we need policy stability, and we need execution of our policy promises.
Leila, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us in conversation today. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. And to our viewers, remember, this webinar will be available via podcast. The series is free, it's shareable, it's open to anyone interested, whether you're a PSG client or not. And if you do want to keep the conversation going, the social media campaign is #ThinkBigPSG. So please do engage with us and look out for the next speaker in the Think Bigs series. For now, from me, Alicia Seckham, it's goodbye. Thank you.